Time for a much-needed getaway. On this edition of the Mermaid Movie Club, we set off to the Greek island of Spetses, where we check on a rather unlucky college professor, his plucky daughter, and a mermaid goddess with an attitude. It's a tale of romance, adventure, and linguistics. I'm Mermaid's Andrea. Let's dive into fish tales. Greetings and shellutations! Welcome to the Mermaid Movie Club, a celebration of merfolk and media, or I should say, welcome to the all-new, way more consistent Mermaid Movie Club with Mermaid's Andrea. Ooh, how about that? Huzzah for figuring things out. I know it's very exciting. I told you I keep my promises. I told you I was working on this, and here we are. Let's just get into that. Speaking of getting into things, I'm excited to get into this movie because it's one I've been meaning to get, and it escaped me for a minute. I'll get into that in just a second. But, you know, like Bjork, I'm a hunter. I bring back the goods, and how does it go? I bring back the goods, but I don't know where. I don't know. I have the same birthday as Bjork, just a fun fact, but that's not relevant to anything here. Anyway, before we begin with the show, let me run some stuff by the first timers. Some of you probably stumbled upon this show for whatever reason, and you're wondering what it is we do here. So, like it, you can kind of guess from what it says on the tin, we watch films centered around mermaids. Centered being the key word. No, we're not watching Shrek 2 because of that one scene in the beginning where the mermaid that totally doesn't look like Ariel falls on top of Shrek and Fiona throws her back into the sea. Although I very much enjoy Shrek 2, it is the best Shrek film. I do not accept criticism on that. But there's not enough mer stuff, that's the point. We watch mermaid-centric films, or merman-centric films, or non-berry mer-entity-centric films, or equal opportunity mer-employer. And we look at the mythology, history, sociology, and just the overall weirdness that ensues in some of these films. But, you know, these films just get shallow weird. From there, we open up the discussion on social media, on my socials, which are in the show notes, and at some point I'd like to get a Discord or something started, so let me know what you think of that. And I highly encourage leaving me voice messages on the Anchor app so I can respond to them in a future episode. I mean, if you want, no pressure. Just don't be a jerk, please. I know it's so tempting, it's so cool to be a cool, mean person on the internet. Actually, no, it's not cool to be mean at all. I don't know how many times I have to say that. I think I've said that in most episodes. And it since then, it has not become any cooler. At least I don't see it as cool. It's just not what we do. So it's a really good way to get me to not respond to your message, not get your message on the show. And it's also a really good way to get you blocked. So my advice is to just not be a jerk. All right. Now that that's settled, I just skipped ahead. Today we're going to talk about the 2007 film Fish Tales. Like I said, this is a movie that briefly escaped me because here's what happened. It was on Amazon. I have like a whole Amazon watch list of films that I plan on covering on the show, and this was one of them. I was like, okay, sweet. Actually, I think it was on my Hulu list for a minute, and then it disappeared from Hulu because everything just disappears from Hulu for me at some point. But it was on Amazon, as a lot of things are, Amazon Prime Video. And when I was ready to actually go and watch it and cover it, it disappeared. And I was just like, are you kidding me? You're really going to do this to me? Amazon, come on. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised it's Amazon. But anyway, I ended up finding it on an app that I downloaded completely on a whim. Sometimes I just kind of go through streaming apps on Roku, like the really weird, like, not third party. They're not third party apps, but they're like apps I'd never even heard of. So this one is called Fiction and Fantasy Films by Fossum.tv. That's awesome with an F at the beginning, .tv. I know, it's really wordy. I've never used it up to that point, or I never even heard of it, but I downloaded it again on a whim, not even looking for the movie at the time. I was just like, oh, hey, here's this app. I'm going to download it. I want to see what it has. And it was there. I was like, whoa, okay. So I guess I got to hold on to this thing now. Okay, sure. The app is free, but there are ads. Actually, quite a few ads. Like if you're watching this on TV on like ABC or FX or whatever with regular ad breaks. But I don't think you need a login to use it. I don't have one, and I was able to watch it just fine with the ad breaks, like I said. Again, that's Fiction and Fantasy Films by Fossum.tv. That's Awesome.tv with an F at the beginning of it. The lengths I go to find these mermaid movies. For you! So the best way I can describe this movie is it's a family comedy. It's kind of verging on rom-com, about a down-on-his-luck college professor in jeopardy of losing his gig at Oxford if he can't get his research stuff together. He's like a classicist, I think he's a classicist, and he has like a specialty in like ancient Greek, and he's researching love spells, because, you know, as you do. So he stays at a colleague's vacation home on an island in Greece, where he plans on buckling down to really get his stuff done. But he and his daughter eventually become entangled with a local mermaid goddess with a penchant for ancient Greek. What happens next is the stuff Disney Channel original movies are made of. But this is not a Disney Channel original movie. Uh-uh. We've actually maxed out our DCOM quota for the foreseeable future. By that I mean there aren't many more mer-centric DCOMs other than the 13th year, which we did in Mermaid Movie Club number 2. Go check that out. This movie was a theatrical release in August of 2007 after a debut at Cannes that same year. It was reviled by critics. Oh, they did not like this at all. And it grossed less than $10,000 upon its theatrical release. To put that in perspective, the budget was $10 million. So this did not even come close to recouping. So, yeah. There was a review on metro.co.uk that I wanted to quote, but it just kind of disappeared from the website. So thanks a lot. The point is, the reception of this movie was just not good. It was very, in fact, the exact opposite. It was, in fact, very, 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 very bad. But here on the Mermaid Movie Club, anything is worth a shot. Because when you're a mermaid, flopping isn't necessarily a bad thing. We do it all the time. This film was written, directed, and produced by Alki David, with co-direction credits from Michael Greenspan, co-production credits from Billy Zane, and co-writing credits from Melissa Painter. The film stars Billy Zane as Dr. Thomas Bradley, our down-on-his-luck professor, Amber Sava as his daughter Serena, Kelly Brook as local mermaid goddess Nereid, and, surprise, surprise, Alki David as Captain Mavros. Okay, this guy just kind of does everything, and I'm kind of jealous. Anyway, without further ado, let's just get right into this. This is Fish Tales. So there's something you really got to admit about just about any mermaid movie you're going to watch, and you've got opening credit scenes that are just like super, super gorgeous, because this movie starts out with, it's just the mermaids swimming through the ocean in Greece. And there's like this song playing, and I swear it sounds like if you took a Billie Eilish song and you pitched it all the way down, kind of like Chopped and Screwed, if you guys know what I'm talking about there. That's kind of what it sounds like. It sounds like if you took a song like When the Party's Over and like really pitched it down. That's what it sounds like to me. And there's this soundtrack over Mermaid Swimming. Something, something Ocean Eyes. And so that's also accompanied, you've got this kind of stiff narration about how the lead character's dad used to tell her stories as a kid. You know, don't they all sound, feels like they all sound like that. Or am I just thinking of Queen of the Damned again? I think I'm thinking of Queen of the Damned again. I think I am. No, I'm thinking of Scales, actually, because there's that opening narration in Scales. I don't know, maybe I'm just using Scales as a benchmark at this point. I don't know how or why, but I guess that film was just very, very, very memorable somehow. Really quickly, we cut to the grand old University of Oxford. Our narrator, a girl named Serena, is strolling the campus with her aforementioned father. That would be Dr. Bradley. And oh man, the first impression I got was, Oxford is pretty. This is a pretty campus. They go to visit what I believe is like the board of directors, the board of trustees or something. I didn't quite catch it. And oh, good Neptune. They are the most stereotypical old white British men you could think of. On one hand, they look like if Statler and Waldorf from The Muppet Show added a third member to their clique. But on the other, they're out here like, magic spells? What poppycock? And they're in this fancy pants office. And I guess Oxford is just fancy pants in general. I mean, it is one of the oldest educational institutions in the world. It's like, if you took Blathers from Animal Crossing, made him less fun, and multiplied him by 3. So you have Dr. Bradley, who I might refer to as Professor Dad occasionally. He goes in to see them, and they're not happy with him. Because someone, Dr. Bradley, didn't have his fish together like he promised to. And so the board is putting him on a forced summer vacation, with his position at the campus on the line. But hey, they can laugh when Professor Dad gets his shoe caught on the table and knocks all their fancy stuff off. I guess maybe they only laugh at someone else's expense. But one of the professors gives him a lifeline. Oh, it's going to get good. So he invites them to stay the summer at his summer home in Greece. You know, casual, because you just have a summer home in Greece when you work at Oxford. What's the salary for an Oxford professor? That was like the one thing I didn't look up for this show, I think. Ooh, excuse me. couple of students wanted their professor dad in the lake for fun when Serena reveals he can't swim. Now, there's something I want to point out. That's something that actually comes up pretty commonly, and it's not one thing that I added to my list of tropes, conventions, what have you, on Tumblr. There's always somebody in every one of these movies or TV shows who can't swim. And even in H2O, I think before Cleo became a mermaid in the first episode, she claimed she couldn't swim. Was it Cleo? I can't remember. I keep thinking it was either Cleo or Emma. Why do I think it was Emma? I don't know. Correct me on that. I watched the first episode a very long time ago. Let's look up some statistics. It was hard finding a quantifiable world estimate, but a recent survey from the American Red Cross claims that 80% of Americans claim to possess strong swimming skills and 20% do not. There are a number of factors to this, the most common being lack of access to swimming facilities, lack of access to swimming lessons based on either affordability or proximity, or just being afraid of the water, which accounted for 39% of people who claimed barriers to swimming in their childhood, and 30% of adults. Now, Professor Dad, Professor Bradley, probably makes quite a bit of money as an Oxford professor, but probably never learned to swim as a child, and probably just never got around to it as an adult. From there, you can kind of make a few guesses as to what his childhood was like. And now I think I know why people try to apply logic to these things so much. A bunch of doors just opened. You know, now you can assume, like, he grew up in a family situation where he couldn't afford swimming lessons, or he didn't live near water, or, you know, he's just been afraid of the water. Among other things, of course. Anyway, enough reality. Let's get back to the fantasy, you guys. So, with, like, 7 minutes into this movie. We are seven minutes into this movie right now, and we're suddenly in Greece. We probably spent 5 or so minutes of this film in London, at Oxford, when suddenly we're in Greece. Wait, what? That was fast. I feel like it took at least 10 minutes for Christina Aguilera to reach Los Angeles in burlesque, which I've watched more times than I care to admit. Granted, you have to sit through a very long musical number before she even reaches the airport. Basically, what I'm saying is the pacing. Okay. All right. So while they're on the boat, Serena reveals that her dad hates water, which kind of confirms one of my headcanons. Thank you, Serena. And Professor Bradley is clinging to that mast like a koala. And at that point, I just feel bad for the guy. He falls into the ocean, and now Serena, this little kid who came out of nowhere, I think he's the captain's son, and the captain of the boat with a metal hand, have to rush to save him. Or not. And they just kind of don't try. They just kind of look like, oh no! But he still gets saved. Can you guess what saved him? If you said trying hard enough and believing in himself, you were wrong. Do not interpret this as an endorsement of hopelessness. No, this is a mermaid movie. He was saved by a mermaid. Da-da. Of course. Remember that mermaid from the opening sequences? No way. Was it her? Yeah, it was. It was her. You know, I feel like I saw this in another movie at some point. Like, I feel like it was like a Ron Howard movie or something. I feel like it was like the last one I covered. It's like a really, really famous one from the 80s or something. Crash? No, it wasn't that one. Anyway, sorry about that. Serena and Professor Dad finally arrive on the island at the house, guided by an old Greek lady and some fart jokes. Because, you know, that's just the kind of movie this is, I guess. Serena discovers an old book written in ancient Greek. A very creepy old book. It reminds me of the journal from Gravity Falls a little bit. And should be very concerning. And maybe you shouldn't be touching this, Serena. I think any kind of large, dusty tome with ancient Greek text and a giant eyeball on the cover is probably not a nice little storybook. Actually, it turns out it's just a book about mermaids. And it has an eye on the cover. Okay. Sure. The next few scenes are Serena and Professor Dad adjusting to Greek island life. And I think this man has like one outfit total. He's still wearing the khaki suit from the beginning. Serena drops this question on him. When's the best time to meet a god? And naturally, he has an answer. Noon, just for your information. And you know what? I kind of like him so far. He's, you know, that if anybody... Listen, if you would ask that question to literally anybody else, they would have been like, what? But he entertains it. He really entertains. I mean, of course, I guess it's part of the job. But his daughter is asking him earnest questions about Greek gods, and he's answering earnestly, and he's coming out here with facts. And I'm like, you know what? Okay, I see you. I see you, Dr. Bradley. That's very, very cool of you. So next, Serena escapes to the beach, which Clemeny, I think she was like a... I forget what exactly she does. I think she's like some kind of... Not a housekeeper. Like a guide. This is the part I missed. One of a few parts I think I missed. But she tells her not to go. But, you know, Serena's a rebellious kid. And my first thoughts in the scene were, wow, 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 wow. But then also, wow, 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 wow. Because all this movie wants to do, honestly, is make me want to go to Greece. Look, all that clear water. Listen, the water at my beach is so foggy. And the seaweed it's seaweed town. It just washes up on the regular. Even the locals, even like the people who live here, they're like, don't go there. Literally, go to any other beach in Florida. Don't go to this one. It is the absolute worst. And I have to agree. That eyeball imagery keeps surfacing here. And I feel like it's going to be important later. There's an eyeball in the book. There's an eyeball on a necklace Serena got from a gift shop. And now there's an eyeball on the seafloor on some kind of tile. So this is getting interesting with the eyeball imagery. So let's see what happens. Let's just keep going. So there's this wedding. I didn't get this scene at all. It just didn't really make any sense to me. So I'm kind of like meh about it. There's a wedding. Dr. Bradley and Serena go to this wedding with the Greek captain, with Captain Mavros, and his son. His son's named Dimitri. Dimitri asks Serena to dance with him through Dr. Bradley. That's not what you do, bro. The bride's dress catches fire off of a misfired firework, and that's a lot of fire. But Dr. Bradley refers to it as a disco inferno, and I'm sure he's been waiting his entire life to make that pun. And I'm thrilled he got that opportunity. It's a dad joke. But afterward, Dr. Bradley immerses himself in his work again. And all Serena wants to do is have fun with her dad on this sort of vacation. Oh, it's going to be one of those films, isn't it? Dr. Bradley actually seems like an actual fun dad, to be fair. But his job here is on the line, so I guess it's easy to understand his desperation. Look, I'm no parent. But if I were, I would do everything I could to be able to hold onto my job to be able to provide for my family. Especially someone like Dr. Bradley, who we learn at some point is actually widowed. So it all makes sense. But you can feel for Serena, too, who just wants to have a good time with her dad. I'm sure he wants to as well, but he just sees there's too much at stake. So, Serena escapes to the beach again with her gear, her flippers and everything, and her epic soundtrack of mid-2000s pop rock. Like, I want the soundtrack to this. I actually really, really like this soundtrack. She's just taking in the beauty of the Greek seaside. When out of nowhere, she spots a fluke flipping in the distance. Wait, what? Okay, I gotta go check that out. She finds our mermaid playing around in the ruins, and here's what I like. This is really interesting. The mermaid does not flee. She doesn't, like, swim away. She's not like, oh, egad, human, and just bolt out of there. No, she swims around, plays with Serena, and she doesn't seem threatened by her at all. It's so cute. It is so cute. And I still don't know what it meant when Serena takes a breath out of the little shell. Like, maybe that allows her to breathe underwater or something. Maybe it's a magical shell. But you know what? This scene is so refreshing. I love it. It's so cute. It's so fun. I was smiling the whole time. And I won't lie, though. The critters kind of look green screened, but I don't know. Again, cute scene. I can look past that. I can look past green screened sea critters. So I thought I would add, though, this is a note about the swimming. It may have been while this scene was being filmed, but while the film was shooting, Kelly Brook actually sustained a minor head injury and nearly drowned as a result, but thankfully turned out okay. I'm going to quote Kelly in the Irish Examiner, dated May 28, 2007. She said, "I held my breath as long as I could underwater, then shot up and smacked my head on a huge Grecian column, which was supposed to be part of a temple set. I suppose I panicked for a moment because my legs were trapped in the mermaid's fins and tail. The costume was stuck on and I was thrown into the sea with my legs together," she continues. "It was quite a bang on the head. I was dazed and saw stars, and there was no way I could climb out on my own. Luckily, some divers rescued me, but it was very painful and quite a shock." End quote. Now, like I said, Kelly turned out fine. But this is exactly why you don't swim alone in a tail. Thankfully, there were divers nearby to help in case something happened to anyone in the cast or crew, especially tailbound Kelly. Okay. Bit of a mermaid hot take here. Here's a hot take. I know you all don't like hot takes. Maybe you do. I don't know. But a lot of people don't like hot takes. But here's mine. Mermaid tails are not inherently dangerous. I know. It's shocking. They can be if you don't know how to use them. If you're not a strong swimmer, or if you're doing it unsupervised, they're not dangerous. Even experienced mermaids use the buddy system. And especially these live-action films where actors use tails underwater, safety divers are often needed. Even in non-mermaid-centric films or TV shows, or even music videos, where you've got like underwater scenes, even like fashion, some fashion photo shoots, I believe, you have to have someone on hand in case something happens to someone underwater. Now, don't take this as me blaming Kelly for anything that happened to her on set. That was exactly why precautions were put in place. It's more me highlighting a common mermaid tale argument that I'm honestly kind of tired of. For more on this, Courtney Mermaid did a really, really good video on this a few months ago that really hammers this home. So I would definitely check that one out. Point being, mermaiding alone, bad. Podcasting alone, fine, as I tend to do. But mermaiding alone, risky as shell. Anyway, this has been a PSA. Back to the mermaid. Our mermaid, like I said, her name is Nereid. She can just kind of do it all. And she, including one of those things she can do is speak ancient Greek. Check her out. Look at that. So naturally, this makes Serena think that she's a natural fit for her dad. But Nereid's like, no, he can't know about me. I apologize for this really kind of crappy accent, but I'm just trying to do my impression of Nereid. Of course, we only know this from Serena's narration on top of Nereid talking about the ancient Greek language more. Okay, see, that was a problem I had with this movie. It was more of a technical thing than anything. Audio thing. Just an audio thing. Serena's narration over Nereid talking is just a bit cacophonous, in my opinion. But that's just something I tend to have a problem with. I don't know if any of you played Kingdom Hearts 3. Okay, all I'm going to say is Kingdom Hearts 3, Arendelle, do you want to build a snowman? Look it up. The sound mixing there was just anyway. I'm sure Dr. Bradley shouldn't probably not know anything about Nereid, but it looks like the Greek captain's son found out. And I've seen enough mermaid movies to know where this is gonna go. Nereid, you got a storm coming. Now, hang on. This is because we're about to get a sick mermaid history lesson from Dr. Bradley. This is what y'all came for, right? Isn't it? Isn't it? You gonna learn stuff? All right. Settle in. Get on your desks, class. We've got a lesson. So here's what he says. He says that the no, hang on. He said something about the Nereids have being basically the like Greek mermaids. I went completely incoherent there. I'm sorry. I just completely jumbled my thoughts. So, the Nereids, he refers to the mermaids as, bleh, he refers to Greek mermaids as Nereids, which is obviously where Nereid, the character, gets her name. The Nereids were sea nymphs in Greek mythology. He notes that they had golden tails, one more for the mermaid colors debate, with jewels on them. That's a new one. And that the Titans seem to really prize them. Okay, that's neat, but when the Greek captain and his son are talking about mermaids, they use the term gorgona, which is literally just the Greek word for mermaid. Let's get a little bit more into this mythology lesson, though, because this is interesting to me. I am basing this off of Magical Mermaids and Water Creatures by DJ Conway, so don't say I don't cite my sources. I do when I remember to. I need to get more in the habit of that. Nereids are said to not have fishtails, but are otherwise pretty similar to mermaids. It also says here that Nereids specialize in spells centered around beauty and happiness. So it's safe to say that based on this, Nereid, as we know her, is not a textbook Nereid. The spelling of her name is different from the actual spelling of Nereid, and for the longest time, I thought it was a typo. There were only 50 Nereids, all daughters of Greek sea goddess Doris and sea god Nereus, and I'm probably getting that pronunciation completely wrong, so I'm very, very sorry. Further reading from Sandra Kine's book, Sea Magic, Connecting with the Ocean's Energy, notes that they lived at the bottom of the sea and sat upon gold thrones in the palace of Nereus. So the Nereids were more like fairy-esque goddesses than actual mermaids. So Dr. Bradley's assessment doesn't quite check out since he claimed the Nereids had golden tails with jewels. But both of my books and some artwork of the Nereids, that's a simple Google search, those claim otherwise. So what was this guy professor of again? Now, the Nereids probably helped inspire the mermaids we know today, along with the Syrian Atargatis that I mentioned while we were talking about Splash. So that makes it interesting, then, that Nereid is called what she is, despite not quite fitting the description for the Nereids of Greek myth. Although she is a goddess of some kind, and her personality seems to check out, so I don't know, maybe it's something like a term of endearment. But anyway, let's get back to the action. Serena is trying to set up her dad with Nereid. And what I find so funny about this is that Dr. Bradley is such a gatekeeper in this, talking about how you can't just be a classicist while he's playing with a wooden fish, kind of ignoring Serena in that regard. Dr. Bradley is too busy being a realist, and Serena is fed up with this. So he winds up at the same cove that Serena's been going to, gets fluke slapped by a mermaid he swears he hallucinated, and she looks an awful lot like Nereid. Spoiler alert, it's Nereid. And then reunites with Serena just in time for a swimming lesson. This scene can be super cringe to some people, but I think it's cute. Serena teaches him to get his float on. He says to she... What is up with me talking today? Serena teaches him to get his float on and says to sing the song that he used to sing to her as a kid, maybe to relieve his nerves, because I've done that before. I do that a lot. And that song just so happens to be The Tide Is High by Blondie. And he doesn't change the pronouns, so that's pretty neat. I'm going to go ahead and tell you this right now. Billy Zane is not Debbie Harry, but who is? He's not the kind of girl who gives up just like that. Oh, no. But a passing Nereid kind of wishes he would, because he has, as she says, a horrible singing voice. It was a little pitchy for her, dog. Imagine being told by a mermaid that you have a horrible singing voice. That's kind of sting. Serena manages to succeed in an unexpected way when Nereid develops legs at night and shows up at Dr. Bradley's door and then proceeds to sass him. Not gonna lie, I think Nereid even outsasses Aquamarine. She reads him in every sense of the word. This girl's not impressed, and I kind of dig it. Know your worth, Nereid. Know your worth, girl. There's this great scene, too, with Captain Mavros, getting out of the house and peeking at the creepy eyeball book that Serena happened upon earlier. And there's a lot of slapstick here. I'm kind of a sucker for slapstick. I don't know why. It begins with Clemente walking in, and Captain Mavros about to strike her with his big metal claw, because sure, but he ends up smacking himself in the crotch and subsequently knocking his statue head onto it. Walk it off, out of the house, preferably, before you get caught. Good luck. Now, when they're at the dinner table, they're at dinner, and they're joined by Dimitri, because I guess he needs friends, but I feel like he's being used by his dad to spy on Serena and Dr. Bradley. Dr. Bradley's just rattling off Greek mythology trivia. I don't really care to nitpick all the myth stuff here because I do want to keep it mermaid focused, which is why I really nitpicked at the Nereid stuff. But all I gotta say is y'all tasteless for falling asleep during this, man. Listen, I am all for Dr. Bradley being all in on Greek mythology. Even Captain Mavros, who is watching on top of a wall above them, falls asleep. Rude. It is rude. See, he didn't learn anything from Humpty Dumpty, because those who sit on walls and fall asleep on walls often have great falls. Now, here's my issue with Captain Mavros. He looks like a super scary, intimidating villain. He's tall, he's tough looking, he's always in a muscle shirt, and he has a whole metal claw. Not just a metal arm. This isn't some whole Winter Soldier thing. He has a whole claw that looks like it was taken out of a claw machine at the Denny's down the road. But he gets into so much dumb stuff that you wonder if he's just the bumbling idiot kind of villain who only looks tough. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Dr. Doofenshmirtz from Phineas and Ferb in that way. So I just kind of imagine if there was ever a gritty remake of Phineas and Ferb, Doof would be a lot like this. That's the impression that I'm getting anyway. By the way, I'm starting to think little Dimitri is going to turn on his father if he keeps this stuff up, because he's taking a liking to Serena and her dad, saying they're nice people. And for whatever reason, Captain Mavros does not like that. You know, now that I think about it, though, I think those kind of dorky elements with Mavros are actually kind of what I like. Just because it makes it, it's fun. It's more fun. Now, there's another swimming shot here with Serena and Nereid. And real quick, I need to point out something. If you're watching this movie, if you even look up a picture of Nereid in this movie, you'll notice that Nereid's tail looks like one of the H2O tails with a new paint job. And it's no knockoff because it's actually by the same person. Imagine that. JMB FX Studio designed Nereid's tail in this film, seemingly using the same mold as the tails worn by Ricky, Cleo, Emma, and Bella on H2O, and the mermaids in Mako Mermaids. Obviously not the mermen. They had different tails, and still not super clear as to why, because I haven't actually started it yet. I know that's sacrilege, but let's just move on. The kind of extension, it's kind of gotten its extension toward the fluke. It's kind of like a long tail, and it's got something on the end, and then there's a fluke. It looks really, really, really gorgeous in this movie, I gotta say. I really love the vibrant colors on it, where it's like, you got this really bright green with this like pastel purple. It's gorgeous. Like, I just love bright colors in general, and it makes for something that's really striking and memorable. Now, one difference between Nered and the H2O girls is that she doesn't have that scale top like they do. She just has a scale boobs. Another quick note about the tail is that it also appears to have like a kind of animatronic thing. I don't know what's going on here. Because you can, it makes the ends of the fluke like move independently, if it makes any sense. But that's only when Nered is above water. I do really like that effect though. I don't remember if that was a component of the H2O tails. I don't remember seeing it at all. But the mold essentially looks the same. And just FYI, this is the same person who did the tail for Aquamarine as well, although it looks very different from the Aquamarine tail. The more you know. And then there's this next scene with Serena and Nered at Nered's little cave. Serena makes the case for helping her father. And if he can't get his fish together with Oxford, Serena has to live with her a-hole, her words, grandparents in Connecticut, which leads to my favorite quote in this entire movie from Nered. She asks, "What's an a-hole?" You had to ask. I guess Nered agreed to Serena's proposal because the next place we see her is in Serena's bedroom, legs all out, giving some serious slumber party vibe. Serena continues on her quest to low-key set them up. And this begins with a fancy Greek dinner, and that ends with the woman from the wedding catching fire again and having water thrown on her. It's funny because right before this happens, Captain Mavros is after Nered again, trying to make his move. So he's kind of like the Walter Kornbluth in this equation, but the water doesn't get dunked on Nered. No. It's the poor bride from before who just can't catch a break. Like, remember in Splash when Kornbluth, he's going after Madison with the buckets, but ends up dunking like the same couple, the same like rich couple with the buckets. It's basically that. That's basically what it is. So, Nered is still not sold on Dr. Bradley at first, but she comes around, and it doesn't take long for Nered to start making moves of her own, working her own siren goddess magic on Dr. Bradley while they're both translating an ancient spell text together. And, oh no. They're reading a spell together. And that's activated. Oh no. Oh, I see where this is going. Oh, man. They read the text together, so they basically cast the spell. Oh no, well this is gonna go about as fun as it does, because suddenly he can't hear anything other than Nered, so Serena has to step in and send Nered packing. And this is where things get a little bit weird. I think the reason why she has to send Nered away is because Nered's about to become a mermaid again when the sun rises. And so obviously she can't have Dr. Bradley see her and find out her secret. So it's best to not be in the room when that happens because it's a secret. But Nered doesn't want to go, Mr. Stark. No, the girl breaks in and professes her love for him. That's breaking and entering. Okay. Hold up. Because spells are crazy stuff. Because this is a total 180. Because Nered went from being totally whatever with this guy and basically wanting him to kiss her feet that she only has occasionally and worship her, you know, like good old days. But now she's absolutely smitten with this guy and he with her. On the one hand, this just really sounds like bad writing. But the whole point of his research is translating ancient Greek love spells. So basically, you had him and Nered translating the text together, reading the spell out loud, and now they're hopelessly in love with each other. To the point where the holes in Serena's story just straight up collapse, and she has to tell her dad everything. But he doesn't care. He doesn't care that Nered is a fish. He wants her. He needs her. Well, he wants her. And he doesn't know if he needs her, but oh, he'd die to find out. I was waiting to make that reference. And I'm sure the feeling is mutual. He and his non-ability to swim can't stand in the way of him and his lover. And it is painful. It is painful to watch. Because Nered says at some point, it's a sickness. And I'm not sure if she meant the love spell or being in love in general, but either way, she's right. Meanwhile, Captain Mavros, he's still following them around. He's searching for that mermaid. He's getting in trouble. And at this point, I'm honestly going to be surprised if he's still alive by the end of this movie. Because he's fallen off walls, nearly caught fire, flips his truck. Pretty sure he breaks some kind of bone at the cove. Oh, what a week he's having! And maybe that's what you get for following a miner around a Greek island in search of a mermaid. Just putting that out there. Remember, Serena's a miner. Serena is 12, I think. 12 or 13 or something. Now let's talk about Dr. Bradley and Nered real quick. When they're in love, they are giddy and they're talking a mile a minute. They spontaneously sing opera, not very well. They project images of their beloved into the ocean with a twirl of their fingers, you know, standard stuff. If I'm honest, the acting in this movie is not great, but this is something that, in my opinion, both Billy Zane and Kelly Brook actually do pretty well. They convey their outright obsession with each other, especially one that was produced by Love Spell. So it comes off rather extreme, but that's a Love Spell for you. Oh, speaking of extreme, while Serena is in the cave with Nerid, Nerid reveals a secret. There's a secret. There's always secrets. There's this little fountain of magic water. Hang on. Important water in her cave. If she drinks from it and her intentions are pure, she can be immortal. If it all goes wrong, she dies. Okay. That's a bit risky. You know, understatement. Maybe you shouldn't drink the water. Okay. Okay, fine. I guess no one listens to me. Except you, if you're listening to this podcast right now, in which case, thank you. Now, Nerid, on the other hand, you in danger, girl. But it looks like it works out, because the next time we see Nerid, she's got her legs, and she's well alive. So, whew, I sure hope this doesn't backfire somehow. Oh. Right. Wherever Serena and Nerid are, Captain Mavros isn't far behind. He's literally whipping out the big guns. Missiles, cannons, what have you, firing them all straight onto Nerid's cave while Serena and Nerid are in it, by the way. Because why? Killing the mermaid will make him rich. Rich beyond his wildest dreams. Oh, okay. So it's not murder when the victim is half human? Then it's just sport? Okay. Good to know. Yeah. Okay. So bye-bye to this, like, funny, slapsticky, doofy Captain Mavros. No, now he's just Kylo Ren. He's blow that piece of junk out of the sky! Or the sea, or whatever. He means business. And I'm not liking it right now. It's getting dark, and in a way I don't like. He's got a harpoon, a full harpoon, a whole harpoon, aimed straight at Nerid, and he's ready to fire. And I'm suddenly really not liking this until little Dimitri, the absolute hero of this whole thing, he intervenes and, long story short, makes him lose his pants. So there's a very brief moment of levity. It's a little bit of a mood whiplash, too, if you ask me. And maybe this scene isn't as dark as it looks to me, but we're talking about actual harpoons. Again, okay, I'm just putting that out there. He pointed a harpoon, a sharp harpoon with a sharp point, at a mermaid and a young child. I'm just putting that out there. Fortunately, Dr. Bradley has come to the rescue, because I guess now he can just kind of swim. So Captain Mavros gets his comeuppance, and everybody is safe. Suddenly, we're back at Oxford. Now, we start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. The Board of Trustees, the Board of Directors, I was never clear on that, they have a change of heart as Dr. Bradley presents his studies, and I do mean a change of heart. That is to say, one of them read the love spell. You can infer for yourself what happens there. Dr. Bradley gets to keep his position at the university, and not only that, he's found a new love of his life, as he and Serena spend the rest of their lives with Nerid, Frankie, whatever she chooses to be called now. Whatever her name is, with occasional summer trips back to the island where it all started. Yes, a very good place to start, where they all live happily ever after. And that, my friends, was Fish Tales. So as we do now on the Mermaid Movie Club, let's run down some of the common mermaid conventions we saw in this film in a segment I'd like to call... I still haven't come up with a name for this, actually. I'll be honest with you. I wonder how many episodes I'm going to do before I come up with a name for this segment. Anyway, this film included quite a bit of subversion of these conventions, but I'll explain the best I can. Just hear me out here. So, the first one. The romance element is very present. I mean, romance is just going to be kind of common in most films in general, but particularly with a mermaid film, it's going to be with a human man and a mermaid. Ultimately, this is forced by the love spell. The spell doesn't wear off, but Serena thinks it's going to at some point. It gets to the point where they're all able to live out their lives together, and Serena now essentially has a mermaid stepmom, or something. Back in the Splash episode, I touched on the story of a Targetus and how it shaped mermaid lore as we know it, of course. Obviously, Little Mermaid is a big part of this as well, as it's probably the best-known mermaid story known today. We all know that one, where a mermaid falls in love with a human and surrenders either her voice or her tongue. I've seen it go both ways, but I think in the original text it's her tongue, to a sea witch in exchange for legs to pursue her human lover. The mermaid's success can vary depending on what you're looking at. We all know in the Disney movie, Ariel gets her man, all things considered. We also know that the ending doesn't reflect the Hans Christian Andersen story, because at the end of that story, the mermaid dies and becomes seafoam. Interestingly enough, there is that risk of Nered possibly dying if she got that whole fountain thing wrong, which I don't think was necessarily a callback to Little Mermaid, but it was an interesting parallel. Maybe it was a callback to the Little Mermaid. Who knows? I'm not Alki David, so I can't make that call. Next one. I'd say that royals are a bit of a convention in themselves. Nered's a goddess, and she claims this up and down throughout the film. We do see a lot of different royals throughout mermaid films, and they're typically like princesses. But Nered is more of a deity. Similar enough. Nered's mannerisms aren't entirely typical of a royal. She's kind of like Aquamarine. She's sassy, she's sarcastic, maybe even a little bit blunt. And also, as with Splash, she's the only merperson we ever meet in the film. But she makes note of a mermaid she sees in Serena's book, saying she knew that mermaid. I forgot to mention that earlier when I was talking about the book. The implication is that Nered is not the only one. Or at some point, she wasn't the only one. Maybe something happened to the merfolk in this universe. Or maybe there's just like so few of them because she's supposed to be a goddess or something. I don't know. It's open to interpretation. Number 3, the legs. You gotta have legs, right? You know, they're required for jumping, dancing, strolling, and more importantly, escaping greedy sailors who wish to kill you for sport. And of course, pursuing human love interests. But remember, that Nered doesn't initially set out for Dr. Bradley of her own accord. Remember, at first she thinks Dr. Bradley is awkward and unbecoming. Serena's been trying to set them up from the get-go. So she only does it as a result of Serena's coercion. And it's not a human when dry thing either. If anything, it's a bit reverse Aquamarine, because Aqua has to be a mermaid at night. But Nered can only be human during the night. Until she drinks from that fountain that erases her immortality and makes her human permanently. See? No sea witch required. It was so simple. Now, number 4. Here's one we haven't actually touched on that much, which is really strange considering the subject matter. Singing. Is that weird? That's weird, right? You'd think there'd be a lot more singing in these mermaid movies. And maybe there are, because this is only like the 6th one we've done. But it's the 2nd of 6 that we've covered. With any amount of Mers singing. It's not a musical. I didn't expect it to be a musical. I knew it wasn't going to be a musical. But, yeah. You'd think there would be more of this. Nered often sings to herself at the cove. I think like she's singing to Dr. Bradley. No, she's singing when Dr. Bradley stumbles upon her for the first time. And he hears her voice and he's like, oh. Who's that? And then he follows it and that's when he gets Luke slapped. Later, when they're reading the love spell, you can hear like a voice singing under Nered and Dr. Bradley reciting the love spell, and that kind of adds to the hypnotic quality of Nered in general and her voice. Also, come on. Listen, at some point we could have had Nered singing The Tide is High. That's what I wanted. I'm guessing she wouldn't have known it at that point. I'm guessing she knows it now. But I just wanted it. Come on. I love that song. I love Blondie. Number 5. Of course, there's got to be some greedy human after her with an agenda. I'm not sure if he's a scientist, but he is the captain that leads Serena and Dr. Bradley to the island where they'll be staying. And once he realizes Serena's been hanging out with a mermaid, he wants her, and he wants her dead. For sport. I guess. Now, at least for the most part, when this happens in other media, like Siren, like Splash, and I think like Scales, the mermaid would have at least been kept alive for study purposes. But this man seems to want a trophy. I'm just kind of imagining that right now, just like having a mermaid trophy, like hanging up on your wall, kind of like one of those like mounted fish. And I don't like this image at all. I mean, I'm already not crazy about like mounted fish. Not really crazy about like hunting trophies in general. But I'm looking at like a mermaid as a trophy, and that mildly creeps me out. But he wants a trophy and he wants the money. He wants all the money. But his son, good guy Dimitri, effectively thwarts him. What did happen to Dimitri at the end of the movie? How did he turn out? I want to know. So, my final thoughts on this movie. You know what? I enjoyed it. I understand it wasn't received very well. The reviews are, I wouldn't even say they're mixed. I would say they're like, not really very good at all. I get that. The story is really weird. Some of the characters are weird. The acting's a bit clunky, a little bit stiff. But, you know, I think I've, this is going to sound really weird when I say this, but just hear me out. I felt similarly about it the way I felt about Pokemon Detective Pikachu. Hear me out. Same idea. Weird story. And the endings of both movies are especially odd to me, especially in Detective Pikachu. That one was just, it was a cute movie. The ending was just strange. I still liked it. It's still an enjoyable movie with some lovely effects. I'm going to be honest with you. There were some moments in here where I was actually like laughing out loud. I mean, honestly, it is really easy to make me laugh. But if I can get some kind of enjoyment out of that, if I can laugh a little bit, then it can't be that bad. That's how I see it. So I just also really enjoyed like having the sassy, sarcastic mermaid. Anytime you have like a really sassy, sarcastic mermaid, I love that. I eat that up. I eat that stuff up. And I liked her alongside awkward professor trying his best. So, you know, I'm going to say it again. I like this movie. I don't know if it's one of my favorites yet, but I really, really do like it. It's fun. I'd probably watch it again as like a comfort movie, put it on just to relax, just to have something fun and lighthearted. I like that. I like that a lot. So yeah, I get the reception to it to some degree, but again, like, it's just a light-hearted thing to watch, and sometimes you just need that, you know? Anyway, that does it for Fish Tales, Episode 6, in the books. As you hopefully know, I've been putting up schedules I just put up the September schedule a couple days ago on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr, all the things that I'm on. We have a new episode every second and fourth week of the month. Every second and fourth week. That's how it's going to work. So the next will be coming to you on September 22nd, and that will be the 2003 film Mermaids. No, not the Cher one. I'm pretty sure that was from 1990. I love Cher, but it's not that one. I understand this is a hard film to find, but I know it's pretty well loved among mermaid fans. I have to thank a listener on Instagram for finding the full movie on YouTube, because that's where it is, the whole thing. It's not exactly Blu-ray quality. It's probably not exactly legal. But it's really all we've got. If you do somehow own it, then you can use that. Also, if you do own it, please tell me where you found it and how I can get it. I beg of you. I want it in my little hands. But until then, let's just hit the outro and wrap this up. Thanks for tuning in to the Mermaid Movie Club for this discussion of Fish Tales. Be sure to tune in on September 22nd for a talk about 2003's Mermaids. For more Mermaid Movie Club updates, visit the homepage at mermaidmovieclub.tumblr.com and follow me on social media. All my profiles are in the show notes. We've got new episodes every second and fourth Tuesday of every month, so be sure to subscribe on the app of your choice, tell all your mer friends about the show, and please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And you can also leave me a voice message on the Anchor app. Until then, this has been Mermaid Xandria. Have a mermaid-amazing day and a fantastic tomorrow. I can't believe that she wanted another Spider-Man reference in this episode.